Welcome to Bible Believers Fellowship and the ministry of BBFOhio.com. I'm Pastor Greg, and I welcome you to our study in Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 46, titled, He Found Them Sleeping for Sorrow. The conclusion of this two-part study can be found at BBFOhio.com, where you will also find our contact and donation information. And we remind you that you can join us for the live stream of our services by going to BBFOhio.com and scrolling down slightly for the live stream player each Sunday morning at 10 a.m. for our Open Bible Study Sunday School, and then 11 a.m. for our Sunday morning service, and then again each Wednesday evening for our midweek service at 7 p.m. That website, again, is bbfohio.com. Now we begin with the current events update, and then our study in Luke chapter 22, verses 39 through 46, titled, He Found Them Sleeping for Sorrow. This is part one of two.
The current events update. American infrastructure is crumbling. This is the end of the year report card for America's infrastructure, the most recent accurate assessment that we have on file. There is a water main break every 2 minutes. Think of that. An estimated 6 billion gallons of treated water lost each day in the U.S., enough to fill over 9,000 swimming pools. Now, that's an amazing statistic, but it also ought to trigger a little bit of common sense for us to realize that when our government is preaching to us about how they care about the environment, they're full of it. They just want you to give more money. They don't want to fix things. Growing wear and tear on our nation's roads have left 43% of our public roadways in poor or mediocre condition, a number that has remained stagnant over the past several years. Nearly half of our roads. I don't know about you, but it's just become a part of life, dodging potholes. And the orange barrel is the state flower in Ohio. But I won't mind the orange barrels if they were fixing things. But the orange barrels seem to always be up in the same places all the time. By the way, there was a meme I should have actually shared. It came to mind just now, though. There's a meme out there that showed that the problem is said, you know, was engineers. The problem isn't the engineers. We know how to make good roads. The problem is because the wheeling and dealing, and they make deals not with the person who can do the job right, and it's not the best bid. It's political payoff too often. And then we have a thing called the Christian work ethic that has gone out the window, and the actual materials used in roads and buildings and so forth in America today are not what they're supposed to be because they chintz in order to make more money. Not too long ago, they went an entire housing, you know, these pop-up housing communities where they put up 100 homes and they all look the same. And they went up and checked that, just this is one thing they found, that every one of the attics only had about a third of the amount of insulation blown in that they were supposed to have. Well, if you add those up, if you've built 10,000 of those homes, and that's how much you've saved, not to correct you, but it's not a shortcut, it's a short change. They make money by not giving you what you paid for. Goes in the pocket. That's going on all over because of the Christian work ethic now being dead in America. So if you buy anything that you can check out before you buy, you better check it out. The pro-Biden left-wing media admits that this is true about our infrastructure. CNN reports America's infrastructure is crumbling and these people are suffering from it. And I just tell you, they did a series that I didn't actually watch the whole thing, but I saw some clips of it. America Crumbles, the Infrastructure Crisis. You see, that was when Donald Trump was president. The cost to fix America's crumbling infrastructure, nearly $2.6 trillion, engineers say. Now, there was an attempt to get a bill through when Trump was president, but they didn't pass it because they didn't want to give him any victories. They cared more about politics than they care about you. And now, the people who blamed Donald Trump are in power and they're not doing anything. Why? Because there's more money in war. The Biden amassed policy spends the money that you give to our government on foreign wars and not in the United States. The Council on Foreign Relations, which is a globalist, anti-American organization. But they, that's why I went to them. No one can say I'm going to some far-right website to get this information. These are the globalists. How much aid has the U.S. sent Ukraine? In humanitarian aid alone, $3.9 billion. In financial aid, $26.4 billion. In security assistance, $18.3 billion. In weapons and equipment, $23.5 billion. Grants and loans for weapons and commitment or equipment is $4.7 billion. Totals $78 billion. They just are spending that money to make those with which are into the tens of thousands of people who have their fingers in the industrial military complex, making them rich while your country falls apart. We only needed 20% of that figure to build a wall and secure our border, and the liars in control of Congress and the Senate said they didn't have the money. They didn't have 20% of what they're giving to Ukraine to build a wall and secure our border in the south, and then they turn around and give five times that much to war. Because, by the way, it's not going to the Ukrainian people. We love Ukraine when it comes to the people. We have missionaries over there we support. But the money is just going into a handful of dirty palms. This is just since the invasion, U.S. military assistance. The top line is Ukraine, $46.6 billion just for the military assistance. The closest is a second, Israel, $3.3 billion. And I have some people complain about, you know, we're spending that, sending all that money over to Israel. It's chump change in real terms to how much money is being spent in Ukraine. And it always has been. Afghanistan, $2.8 billion. Egypt, 1.3. You add all that up, and it's only about a tenth of what they're spending in Ukraine. Here's a little update for you.
War's a racket, wrote U.S. Major General Smedley Butler in 1935. He explained, "A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group knows what it's all about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few, at the expense of the very many. Out of war, a few people make huge fortunes."
I just want to say this before I go on with this clip. Smedley Butler, at the time he said that, was the most decorated military man in American history. He was the most accomplished. He was considered a war hero after World War I. But that's what he had to say about it. When he looked at what that war and all these wars are all about. It's all about making money.
General Butler's observation describes the U.S.-NATO response to the Ukraine war perfectly. The propaganda continues to portray the war in Ukraine as that of an unprovoked Goliath out to decimate an innocent David, unless we in the U.S. and NATO contribute massive amounts of military equipment to Ukraine to defeat Russia. As is always the case with propaganda, this version of events is manipulated to bring an emotional response to the benefit of special interests. One group of special interests profiting massively on the war is the U.S. military-industrial complex. Raytheon CEO Greg Hayes recently told a meeting of shareholders that, quote, "Everything that's being shipped into Ukraine today, of course, is coming out of the stockpiles, either at DOD or from our NATO allies. And that's all great news. Eventually, we'll have to replenish it, and we will see a benefit to our business." Close quote. He wasn't lying. Raytheon, along with Lockheed Martin and countless other weapons manufacturers, are enjoying a windfall that they have not seen in years. The U.S. has committed more than $3 billion in military aid to Ukraine. They call it aid. But it's actually corporate welfare. Washington sending billions to arms manufacturers for weapons sent overseas. But many accounts, these shipments of weapons like the Javelin and anti-tank missiles jointly manufactured by Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are getting blown up as soon as they arrive in Ukraine. This doesn't bother Raytheon at all. The more weapons blown up by Russia in Ukraine, the more new orders come from the Pentagon. Former Warsaw Pact countries, like members of NATO, are in on the scam as well. They've discovered how to dispose their 30-year-old Soviet-made weapons and receive modern replacements from the U.S. and other Western NATO countries. While many who sympathize with Ukraine are cheering this multi-billion dollar weapons package, will make little difference. As former U.S. Marine Intelligence Officer Scott Ritter said on the Ron Paul Liberty Report last week, quote, "I can say with absolute certainty that even if this aid makes it to the battlefield, it will have zero impact on the battle. And Joe Biden knows it." End of quote. What we do see is that the Russians are capturing modern U.S. and NATO weapons by the ton and even using them to kill more Ukrainians. What irony. Also, what kinds of opportunities will be provided to terrorists with thousands of tons of deadly high-tech weapons floating around Europe? Washington has admitted that it has no way of tracking the weapons it is sending to Ukraine and no way to keep them out of the hands of the bad guys. War is a racket, to be sure. The U.S. has been meddling in Ukraine since the end of the Cold War, going so far as overthrowing the elected government in 2014 and planting the seeds of the war we are witnessing today. The only way out of the hole is to stop digging. Don't expect that anytime soon. War is too profitable. Thanks for listening.
That is just the best summary that I found anywhere. Said it better than I could have. And that's the reality. Is they just send the weapons over, they get blown to smithereens, they get to replace the old stuff with the new, and send more over, and send more over. Just a money scam. That's all it is. Sadly, it's not going to end until Jesus comes back and kills them all. That's what's going to change things. And what we can do is pray for especially those who are caught in the crossfire, killing a lot of innocent people. Pray for our men and women in the service that they won't be used just thrown to the wind like they have so many times. What do you think happened in Afghanistan? How much in weapons did they leave behind for the enemy to use against whoever they wanted, including our own men? $85 billion. Tack that on to the number that we're talking about in Ukraine. And just think about only a small percentage of that amount of money and you could fix the problems we have in this country. It's just amazing. But America's collapse is by design. Our leaders, many of whom will go out and on the stump tell you they're conservative. And yet they'll turn right around when they get elected and just sell you down the river. What can you do? I still believe you try to elect the best man you can, the best woman in some cases. But we don't trust in man. We trust in the Lord. We do the best we can with what we've got. We pray. We watch and pray. And then we look for him to return and take care of it all. But this, what you're seeing happen before your face, will enable the Antichrist to establish global currency, mark of the beast, and global government without American interference. As the American purpose and power declines and it becomes global in nature, as the dollar declines and we have a global digital currency and all these things, the bottom line is America will now be out of the way. And they'll be able to do whatever it is they want. All right. Chapter 22, verses 39 through 46. The title, He Found Them Sleeping for Sorrow. I hope that's not describing you right now. We're going to see Jesus having a midnight time of prayer. Midnight prayer. And he'll get no sleep tonight. So verses 39 through 46, whenever you read the even verses with me. So I'll start in verse 39. And he came out and went, as he was wont, to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said unto them, pray that ye enter not into temptation. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's cast, and kneeled down and prayed, saying, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And there appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was as it were drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose up from prayer and was come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow. And he said unto them, why sleep ye? Rise and pray, lest ye enter into temptation. Amen? So Jesus is leaving the Passover meal, a Passover meal gathering, we call it, and walking into the night before his death. It's quite an image there, if you think about it. We've given you a timeline available on the website for download. And the meal started around 6 p.m., which would be our Tuesday, but it was Nisan 14 by the Jewish reckoning or calendar. And as we read our text, we are approximately there on the timeline around midnight. And this is the night before the crucifixion, but by Jewish reckoning, it's the day of the crucifixion. This entire chapter unfolds. So verse 39, and he came out and went as he was wont to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples also followed him. Isn't that interesting if you think about it? That Jesus frequented the site of his eventual return as King of Kings. We watched a little movie last night, and the lady was trying to build a relationship with her mother-in-law, and they were on a road trip. She went out of the way and took her to show her where her son had proposed marriage. And we've seen video of where Charlie proposed to Olivia. How many of you married couples remember where you were? One of you? Okay, there you go. Yeah. I probably have the most romantic story. I don't want you men to feel bad. But I proposed to Jenny early one morning. Well, it was exactly 10:10 a.m. on 10:10 of 2005.
Wow.
In the parking lot of Stephen Berry's. That's a now defunct clothing store. We'll go back there many times and just sit in the parking lot. Yeah. But I didn't think about that. I thought, if I'd been thinking more, I just thought, you know what? Today's the 10th. We're supposed to meet this morning. I'm going to make sure at 10:10 on 10:10. That's as far as my thinking went. I didn't think about a better place than a parking lot outside of a department store. But how many of you ever been to a place where you're about to have a house built? How many of you have been involved in maybe a church and they're going to build a building on a lot, but you go there and there's nothing there but cornfields? I mean, we can think of all kinds of things that we can go to a location where everybody else around is oblivious to the fact that that location means something. And that's what is going on with Jesus here. He's going to the Mount of Olives. He knows. He has foreknowledge of it. He can see it. Where he's at as he's praying about being crucified, he also knows this is where he will return one day. The joy that was set before him. When you read that in Hebrews and you think about it, he had the real knowledge of what's going to happen when he returns. The Mount of Olives today looks like this. Now, in Jesus' day, obviously those buildings weren't there. At the top, somewhere up there, probably with the one with the steeple, is an Orthodox church that's on the top of that mountain. But when Jesus returns, he could see what it was going to look like. And it would look something like this. Because the prophet Zechariah tells us that it is going to split in two right down the middle. And that he then will walk in that path going right in through the eastern gate of the city of Jerusalem. And so Jesus knows this. Even as he's near the Mount of Olives when he prays, says in verse 40, and when he was at the place, he said unto them, pray that ye enter not into temptation. That's a question for us to ask. Do you ask God to keep you from unnecessary troubles? I highly recommend you add that to your prayer life if you're not doing it already. Do you know trouble's coming? How many of you can confess this? Trouble comes and you're shocked. That's how a lot of people respond, and I'm one of them. I've done it. Trouble comes, and I'm shocked there's trouble. I got news for you. Don't be shocked. It's coming. I think I mentioned last week, I always told my kids, I say, Charlie, life's going to be rough enough. Don't add trouble to it. And on top of that, pray and ask the Lord, lead us not into temptation. Meaning, Lord, I don't need any more trouble than I know is already coming. Help me to avoid making those choices, making those wrong turns, doing things that'll be trouble. One of the biggest ones you can make is marrying the wrong person. Sometimes you can take the wrong job. Sometimes there have been people who chose the wrong church. All those decisions you have to understand are going to affect the rest of your life. Choose wisely and pray. Actually, pray before you make the choice. That's one of the main points there. And Mark added this in Mark 14:34, and saith unto them, my soul is exceeding sorrowful unto death. Tarry ye here and watch. So as he's getting ready to go off alone, he's asking them to identify a little bit with what he's going through. Have some empathy for me and pray. That's what we're here for one another. You do have to ask, though. We're not mind readers. There have been times where people have gone through some terrible things, and after it's all over, they show up and tell me what it was all about. Like, well, I'm glad you made it, but if you told us, we could pray for you, and we might even be able to help. So that's true with one another, but it's also true with the Lord. Well, the Lord can read your mind, but He...